What the EFL? I'm glad you asked. We're a new podcast focusing on all things Football League. Each week, we'll bring you the very best analysis, insight and expert opinion, plus the delightful nonsense you might associate with our previous work. Welcome to What the EFL. Well, hello there. Thanks for lending us your ears. I'm Matt Davis Adams. Every week, I'll be joined by two of my mates and some familiar faces slash voices from the world of the EFL to run the rule over everything Football League. So I've got the bluster and hoopla covered, but we're going to need some actual expertise too. Luckily, I know just the pair to provide it. Adrian Clarke played for Arsenal, Southend, Stevenage and more before turning his hand to broadcasting for Arsenal, The Athletic, the Premier League, TalkSport and more. Hello, Clarkey.
Hello, Matt. I remember you.
It's funny, this, isn't it? It's like school's out or something. Enjoying it so far. With Adrian, each and every week will be a man who bagged a century of EFL goals in a playing career that spanned the country from Swindon to Exeter via Luton, Ipswich, and plenty more stop-offs. You'll know him from the English Football League highlights on ITV, TalkSport, BBC London, and more. It's Sam Parkin. Good day to you.
Hello, Matt. How's it possible that you've got better? It's just for the love of the game, clearly, isn't it? Oh, unbelievable stuff.
This whole thing is just for the love of the game. Later, we're going to hear from EFL stalwart Joby McEnough. But first, let's address the EF elephant in the room. We used to do the Totally Football League show. Yeah, that got binned by The Athletic. No, we're not holding a grudge. We're not bitter. And no, we don't know when to say when. So we're doing this all by ourselves. We're not affiliated with The Athletic or anyone else just now. And we loved our time as part of Team Totally. But damn it, we wanted to keep making Football League podcasts. So that's exactly what we're going to do. By the way, we're looking for sponsors. So if you think that could be you or a business you know, drop us a line at whattheefl@yahoo.com or on Twitter. Our handle there is @EFLwhatthe. The email again, whattheefl@yahoo.com. All right, that's enough admin. Let's get to the football. Right, we're going to kick off with a look back at the weekend that was across the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2. The boys have picked three games each that they feel warrant discussion. Adrian, what the EFL are you going to start with?
I am going to start with the Hawthorns, the happy Hawthorns, which you can't often say that about that stadium. It's been pretty dire, pretty miserable for a long, long time. Lots of empty seats over the last few seasons, but they had their rewards, didn't they, at the weekend? It was a much better performance. West Brom 5, Hull City 2. And yeah, I just think it was a breakthrough match, potentially for Steve Bruce's team. They'd been creating a lot of chances this season without finishing them off. And they got lucky with an own goal early on in the game. And it seemed like that sort of bust the dam a little bit and things started to open up from there on in, and it was a really good performance. I mean, I think they made 500, almost 600 passes in the game, 593, which would never have happened, as you know, under the previous manager, Valerian Ismail. They pressed brilliantly. I think they've got the most high turnovers in the Championship at the moment, 37 West Brom. And they just really got stuck into Hull City and played well. Grady D in Garner, I think, was the standout. He's created plenty of chances this season. I think he's second only to Jed Wallace in the charts, most in open play as well. So yeah, look, it was a good performance against a Hull City team that had been going very well. So well played, West Brom.
Here's a question for you, Clarkey. I was put right on this exact subject the other day. Carlon Grant, I think, got 18 goals in the Championship last year. He's notched again at the weekend.
Yeah,
got two for the season. In a lot of West Brom's fans' minds, he's not the right man for this system. Where would you stand on that? Because maybe he's not the physical focal point that Steve Bruce would require in his setup.
Ooh, that is a good point. I wouldn't swap him right now for either of the wingers. That's for sure. You know, you wouldn't swap him for Dean Garner, who's been their best player over the last few games. You wouldn't swap him for Jed Wallace, who's providing great ammunition as he always does from the wings. I wouldn't be in a rush to change it. I've got to be honest. I've always thought he was a pretty good finisher. You could potentially, I guess, play him off of a striker. That might be his best role, where you give him a little bit of freedom. behind a big man. But yeah, in the here and now, I don't know exactly where he is. I mean, what do you think?
I agree. And that's why I made the point. But I was kind of told in no uncertain terms that his characteristics of player probably wouldn't fit. Obviously, they got DK to come back. I think he's going to be out now for a few months. But the noise from the West Brom supporters is that they need a new number nine, which I think when you look at the statistics is a little bit greedy. Mm. You know, they look at the firepower they've got, the ones they've already cherry picked in Swift and Jed Wallace in terms of creation. I don't think they're too far off.
All right, so bring back Andy Carroll's what we're saying there. I looked at this game and thought, oh, manager going up against his former club, that always adds a little bit of extra narrative. I'm just looking at West Brom's championship fixtures coming up. Next, they're at Huddersfield, formerly managed by Steve Bruce. Then they go to Wigan, formerly managed by Steve Bruce. Then Burnley and Coventry, fine. Then they host Birmingham, formerly managed by Steve Bruce. Before it's a trip to Norwich, where Steve Bruce used to play. He gets around, doesn't he? Sam, what the EFL do you want to talk about in the championship?
The six-goal thriller at Turf Moor. The game that had everything, football cliches alert. Yeah, I saw Blackpool in the week and I thought actually the goal they scored at QPR would probably have done so much good for the dressing room. I've been in situations toiling as a striker in a side collectively who's not getting goals. And I think to get that kind of monkey off their back, they haven't scored since the first half of the season, was probably quite pivotal in this comeback. Yes, they only took a point, but I think when the lads have the confidence that there's goals in the team all of a sudden, that can kind of grow. So it was a really good recovery from Blackpool. Everything that was good about Burnley in the first half. I loved the couple of long balls from Harwood Bellis, who I think is going to be vitally important in this system that Vincent Kompany is trying to implement there. Josh Cullen equally so. We saw the bad part of Josh Cullen, the bad part of maybe what Kompany is trying to do there in giving the ball away that ultimately ended up in a goal. But the two passes forward, I thought were really interesting. A ball playing centre-half, almost Toby Alderweireld-esque, which I'm sure Kompany would have noted given it's his fellow countryman, but brilliant raking passes. One finished off from distance and then the second one by Teller. So, yeah, some really good stuff from Burnley in that first half. But I just felt that goal for Blackpool gave them a little bit of optimism going into the second half. And the changes from Michael Appleton, I've read this and seen this spoken about consistently. That's the first thing that the Blackpool fans are picking up on in comparison to Critchley. In-game changes, being quite really positive with his substitutions. And I think Medin coming on, even though he didn't score, that probably disrupted Burnley's back line. They went longer. The statistics showed you that. I think over a third of their long balls came in the last 20, 25 minutes. So that really rocked Burnley and ultimately ended up in Blackpool getting a share of the spoils, a deserved share of the spoils.
Can I just say, I think that there are a couple of red flags for Burnley, even though I think there's a lot to like about them. Teller and Rodriguez, love their mobility. I think they'll score goals. But the red flags at the back with Harwood Bellis and Taylor, who's like a left back that's being used at centre half, Matson as well, not the biggest, is aerial weakness and the possibly being bullied by big guys like Medin. And the other one is playing out from the back. Every time the ball goes back to Muric in goal, I think there's a collective groan from the Burnley fans. And, you know, I don't know whether you've had this at Forest or Sam's seen it at various grounds, but I remember it at Arsenal when they first started playing out from the back. You could just hear the whole stadium on edge. And I think that may be transmitted to Muric and the players as well. So just wonder whether they'll bin that or not.
There's a good bloke just next to the commentary position, Matt. I don't know if you're au fait with him at Turf Moor, who's like, oh, bloody hell.
He was busy on Saturday. Yes. Yeah, Forrest had Muric on loan a couple of seasons ago, and he had such a rotten game in his first appearance against West Brom that he only played three more times, and then he was binned off. All right, so that was the championship. What about in League One? What the AFL caught your eye here, Adrian?
I think it's got to be Barnsley Neil Wickham 3 for the goal, really. Dominic Gape's 45-yard chip was just exceptional. They did say on the highlights show that it was a lob. it was never a lob, was it? Let's be honest. I think it's important to get these things right. He chipped it off the floor and over the goalkeepers, and it was brilliant. And it was a superb away performance from Wickham, full of great goals, really. Mometi had a little sort of jinky run and a lovely finish. And then the last goal from Freeman was a drive into the top corner from distance as well. I was looking at Wickham. They've scored 8 open play goals now from an XG of 4.5. So it shows you that maybe it's not sustainable, that they keep on scoring amazing goals. But yeah, this if you're a Wickham fan, this was a match to really savour. The other point of note, really, from their end is that McCleary played up front. I think he looks good up there. I think getting someone of his pace and mobility and skill is sensible in the most advanced part of the pitch, especially when Vokes is injured. But it means that they've used 4 strikers now in 5 games. Vokes, Mellor, Wheely, and now Vokes, Mellor, Wheeler, and McCleary. That's 4 strikers in 5 games. So, yeah, not an ideal situation, but it was a great day for them.
Yeah, much needed win for Wickham too. I'm disappointed not to see any goal gaping puns / headlines in the Buckinghamshire press, but maybe next week. Sam, we're going to Fratton Park for your League One pick.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of needle, but there's quite a lot of fun stuff as well.
In a match that involving Joey Barton and Danny Cowley.
Yeah, well, let's start with Danny Cowley, who referred to Owen Dale's performance as fizzy.
I saw that. What is fizzy?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think he's just effervescent. He's busy. He got his goal once he'd been switched flanks. Actually, looking at the touch map and what have you, he wasn't very involved at all. But, you know, listening to a lot of the Pompey fans on the back of this result, he was one of the better players. So he's going to prove to be a really important sign-in, I think. But I think from a Portsmouth perspective, the substitutions, Piggott coming on and getting a goal, winning the penalty, Dane Scarlett playing the lovely ball for Owen Dale, just emphasising, you know, what a kind of good 18 they've got right now. I think there's the opportunity for Danny Cowley to rotate, as he did with a couple of players in this game, bringing Jacobs and Thompson in. Thompson, unfortunately, getting that injury early on. But, you know, despite the 4-1 in the week against Cambridge, he can shuffle the pack now. And the other fun thing I thought was when I saw the teams come out, Bristol Rovers lined up in a 3-3-3-1. I thought, no chance. So I've had a look at the little heat map today and done some reading, and it pretty much is that, apart from he had the 3 centre-halves and he had Glenn Whelan and Paul Coutts essentially sitting on their toes. And the thought process behind that was to stop off the supply to Colby Bishop, who's the man of the moment in the division, and also to have more competition for those second balls when it dropped down. So I think to a degree, it probably had a little bit of success, but it probably just hindered them a little bit with what they could do in the opposition's half and in the final third. But yeah, interesting tactics from Joey Barton and decent sparring after the game, basically telling the Cowleys that they're not good management material because they didn't play at a high enough level, which was thoroughly enjoyable again.
Yeah, trademark Barton, wasn't it? It's interesting you bring up that formation, because he even had a pop at the Cowleys for that, didn't he? He said something about the Cowleys. They play a 4-4-2. That formation is not going to take you where you need to get to, basically saying it's old school rubbish, which, you know, it's quite a funny thing to say when you've just been beaten. So, I like the beef, though. It was good.
Just one other quick point. I said it on Saturday when we were getting ready for the show, EFL show. I loved Bishop and Charles so much when they were a partnership at Accrington. Why didn't a League One or a Championship side go and take the duo? Has it ever happened? Why doesn't it happen? Think of like Shearer and Sutton when they were in their infancy, or York and Cole. You know, why don't Real Madrid come and go, right, there's 50 million, we'll have the pair. Just do what you've been doing. I can't think of, you know, I remember the Simon Davis and Etherington move from Peterborough to Spurs, but I'm clutching at straws a little bit with that one.
You very rarely get partnerships, do you? I remember Forrest selling Carl Darlow and Jamal Lascelles to Newcastle, which probably defend a little bit, but yeah, not quite. Good win for Pompey then, but yeah, would have been great. But Louis Thompson, we hear today, double leg fracture. That's his season, isn't it, Clarkie?
Yeah, that's awful. Just going, that is really sad news. I saw the sort of pictures of people looking at the injury, and it was not good. So, yeah, we wish him well. Just coming back to Sam's shout on the partnerships, which is a, a really good one. You've just done it. You've just recruited the old Clarkie and Parky, haven't you? In one foul swoop, free transfer. So what, the EFL, it can be done.
Yeah, free transfer. Very much the, very the buzz much. Phrase there. Adrian, what the EFL has Pete Wild done to Barrow? Because they're a team transformed at the start of the season.
Yeah, they look good. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about Barrow. Look, on the face of it, it's a 1-0 home win against Harrogate. It's not especially exciting, but it's 4 wins from 5 for a team that really languished at the bottom end of the table last season. It's been excellent. He's organised them. I think that's really, really clear. They got a compact back four. The fullbacks tuck in and work hard. The centre halves has got a new partnership there at the heart of the defence with Niall Canavan and Sam McClelland, who I think is on loan from Chelsea. They've struck up a good rapport, and he's brought some good players. The lad he signed from Stockport, wide man Ben Whitfield, 2 goals, 4 assists already. He's building a team that's hardworking, compact. They press, and they take, you know, they go at you hard and fast, and they controlled this game. They didn't really give the opposition a sniff, and I think that's been the story. Really, they've given up very, very few opportunities across the last 5 games, Barrow. So people will look at them towards the top end of the table and say, oh, they'll fall away. But yeah, just, you know, on the eye test and some of the data as well, it would indicate that actually they've got the ability to stick around in the top half.
Sam, you picked Newport. I'm filing this under much needed win.
Yeah, I think when you look at the pedigree of the two managers, or the potential certainly of Robbery against the experience, the success that Mickey Mellon's had, I think everyone would have had these two teams probably in the top half of the table. And that can still happen, obviously, but they've had very, very slow starts to the season. So I thought this was a big win. I thought great to see Omar Bogle finding a home after a few years where he's just not been in any shape or form at all. He's had near enough the most attempts in the division. Only Hoskins and Patterson at Harrogate have had more. I think that shows you a striker who is in much better fettle, in a rich vein of form, confident. He had 5 attempts in this game alone as he converted a penalty. But the real story was the two young boys. Mariah Welsh on loan from Bournemouth getting a goal, and Thierry Nevers, by all accounts, only turned up on the Friday. He had been in regular conversation with the manager and the hierarchy with regards to signing, but he only arrived from West Ham on Friday, and he was stellar in this game. Made the first goal, outstanding, pulling wide, giving them a different element in their forward play. Those two made a real difference, and that's going to be interesting if they can have that attacking impetus moving forward, because defensively, not looking particularly good. 3 own goals they've scored already this season, which has got to be something of a record. So they're looking a little bit all over the place defensively. And I just think it's interesting because we had this huge change under Flynn when they changed from being the most direct side, arguably, in the EFL to being quite kind of tick-attacker. And we all probably anticipated James Robbery to continue in this vein. But, you know, only 39% of the ball at home the other day at Rodney Parade. Tranmere, far and away, the lion's share of the ball. So I think it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on Newport and see if this is going to be a new vibe, really, from James Robbery, even in this early stage of his career.
Yeah, it can often be a tricky pitch to get it down and play on, can't it, at Rodney Parade. So maybe that's part of the thinking next up for them. They play Portsmouth in the League Cup midweek, then they go to Harrogate. All right, that was the weekend. That was next up today, the scouting report. Right, this is the scouting report. It's where Sam and Adrian are going to provide us some insight onto something, some team or somebody from the EFL. Sam, you want to have a look at Josh Bowler. He's a player who's attracting a lot of interest. We wonder if he'll still be at Blackpool come the end of the window. Nearly joined Forest last season, by all accounts. Had a bit of a slow start to the season, but he was heavily involved on Saturday.
Yeah, I think he's their best player. I don't think there's any argument with that. He was brilliant at QPR last midweek. Obviously scored the winning goal. He just turns, you from defence into attack so quickly. And I think that helps that Blackpool ultimately aren't going to have much possession this year. They're a bit of a counter-attacking side. So how it would translate to a side nearer the top of the division or a team that's a bit more possession heavy would be fascinating. But he does, in fact, have the most dribbles in the division, the most successful dribbles in the division at this early stage. And interestingly, the joint most shots with Joel Pirou, who hasn't got himself a goal to this point, but he is absolutely peppering the target. 3.8 shots per game he's had. 19 shots in total, 12 inside the penalty box. So given an opportunity to come in off the right-hand side, invariably he lets fly. I think he can probably improve his decision-making. I think he's only created 4 chances, and Clarkey was talking about some of those players at West Brom, Dean Garner and Jed Wallace, who are well into double figures at this stage. And I think that sometimes he can be a little bit preoccupied with getting that shot away or maybe taking on that last defender when he can potentially slip in a teammate. But I think the rise and the speed of it is astonishing, really. He's only, if you think about it, only had the one real campaign at Blackpool last time out where he's playing consistently, 7 goals and 3 assists. But at 23 years of age, I would imagine him moving to a Premier League club is a bit of a no-brainer if they can get a good price for him. So, yeah, very, very impressive. Not his best game at the weekend, but played centrally in that draw at Burnley, but definitely one I expect to move and I expect to probably make an impact.
Yeah, I want another crack at the big time, having played at Everton without any real impact. Is he quick, Sam? Josh Bowler?
Yeah, I'd say one of those probably quicker with the ball, the old cliche, right? You know, moves beautifully with it. Yeah, I was thinking, who did he remind me of, actually, when I was noting down a few facts and figures earlier? And appearance-wise, it's Bolo Zenden. And maybe as a footballer as well, on the right-hand side, cutting in. But he looked to be quite the leader as well. That's what I noticed from the game at Loftus Road. Obviously, had a good vantage point up on the gantry. And, you know, a few passes went astray from teammates or people didn't track back and what have you. And he wasn't shy in letting people know. So he doesn't look like a 23-year-old. He's only really got one senior season of consistent good performances under his belt. He looks like, you know, a talismanic figure now. So perfect to move into a club maybe in the lower reaches of the Premier League or someone going for the autos in the Championship.
Lovely stuff. I wasn't expecting that level of insight to a question, which was basically just an excuse for me to call him a fast-paced bowler. But there we go. Clarky, you're a Southend fan, which means you're keen on misery, which brings us nicely to your scouting report for the week. It's Stoke City and the goals they concede. I mean, bad vibes FC this season. Is that Stoke City? It kind of feels like it.
It does feel like it. Stoke fans are not happy right now. And I just noticed that the manager, Michael O'Neill, was bemoaning the goals that they've conceded this season. And I thought, well, let's look back at them and study where they're going wrong. And yeah, for anyone that hasn't seen Stoke, almost every goal they've conceded has been a bad mistake so far. First game of the season, young Harry Clark on loan from Arsenal got himself into a bit of a pickle, marking Creswell at Millwall. Terrible marking from 2 corners. And he scores the goals. And so that's a basic individual error times 2. At Huddersfield, it was young Connor Taylor's turn, another young central defender. Now, Michael O'Neill's been on record as saying he wants to lower the age of the Stoke City side, which I get and is totally understandable. But it was another youngster that made a mistake there. Connor Taylor, ball over his head from a corner. They score. The next game, it was another youngster, Tom Sparrow, trying to play out from the back. Sloppy square pass in field. They score from the turnover. And the next goal was trying to play offside and the left back doesn't follow the runner and they get in and score another goal. This was against Huddersfield. So every single goal until that point was avoidable. Then you get to the Middlesbrough match and then it's a bit of a horror show, I'm afraid, from Phil Jagielka. Again, individual performances. He lets his man get across him at the near stick for one. He ball watches for the other. And Watmore gets across him again before he then turns the ball into his own net. So there's sort of every single goal that I've mentioned is definitely poor. And then you look at the weekend one as well. You've got Jack Clark of Sunderland comes out of defence. No real pressure on the ball. And as Sam will tell you, when there's no pressure on the ball, you can't hold a high line. They did. And the ball gets knocked over Wilmot's head. Ross Stewart, one of the most mobile strikers in the championship, gets beyond Wilmot, outpaces him. And that's just the first mistake of two, because Bursic has exceptionally weak wrists with a shot, and it sort of dribbles into the corner. So you look at Stoke near the relegation zone, it's all doom and gloom. But in terms of what they're doing at the wrong end of the defensive end of the pitch, it's not a structural thing as such. It is more individuals losing concentration, losing focus at key moments. So maybe, just maybe, once those guys sharpen up a little bit and learn from their errors, they'll be able to keep teams at bay, because they're not gifting opposition teams that many chances.
They're trying to bring the average age of the squad down. That's going to be tricky when you've got 40-year-old Phil Jagielka playing in defence, I would guess. Sam, did you see much of Liam Delap during his development days at Manchester City? Because obviously there's a familial link, which is why he's gone there on loan. Well, not why he's gone there, but I'm sure it was a bit of a fact. He did well for the England under-19s, didn't he, too? Is he going to help them out at the other end of the pitch?
I think so, because I think everyone just expects there to be a click of the finger and Dwight Gayle scoring 30 goals in the Championship again. Listen, I missed this. I think he scored one in 30 or something, hasn't he? I wasn't aware of that statistic. I probably expected him to be amongst the goals already, but he looked short of fitness more than anything. It's probably more that than a confidence thing. I think him being back in the second tier should renew some of that belief. Mm. But I think having another body there, and you know, a young lad who's very talented. Remember him getting one goal in particular for the development side from about 25 yards, if memory serves me right. I don't know if we did the game together, Matt, but he took the ball down out of the sky on the left-hand channel, cut in field and bent one into the top right-hand corner. So he's clearly not just an old-fashioned number nine, and gives them real quality. And was it Steve Bruce? I think it was a bit sore about him choosing Stoke, wasn't it? Because it obviously the link with his dad, who's part of the coaching staff. So good decision. At least he'd be saving on the diesel.
Yeah, exactly. A bit of car sharing. It's they've got some firepower, haven't they, Stoke? So again, you would expect them to score plenty of goals this season with Delap there, Jacob Brown, Tyrese Campbell, who's a little bit out of form.
Probably make Wright's or break grandson, for Michael O'Neill, though, hasn't it? I mean, he's had three seasons there now?
Yeah, definitely. There was an upturn initially, but it's all levelled out a bit, hasn't it? But yeah, I just wondered, I know a lot of Stoke fans aren't happy with the three at the back system. They don't think they've got the right wing backs to play that shape, and I get it. But I think he's married to the idea of having two strikers, because he's got so many good front players. He feels that he's got to play at least two of them. And the system that is the most solid with a two up front is 3-5-2. So yeah, he's got some big calls to make, but first up, he's got to get his players to cut out these silly mistakes, because it's really, really hurt them.
All right, next up, a feature we're calling the Fit and Proper Guest Test. It's a clever title that Clarkie's come up with to describe a conversation with one of our friends from the world of the EFL. First into the not very hot seat is the midfielder turned pundit, Joby McEnough. Joby, what a delight to have you as our very first guest on What the EFL.
It's an absolute pleasure to be the first guest, and hopefully the first of a few appearances over the course of the season.
Well, let's see if you pass the fit and proper guest test. Right, here's my first question for you. I think this is probably quite an easy answer. What's your preference, player or pundit?
Oh, is it an easy answer? Definitely playing, but I've got to say I've really enjoyed the transition into punditry. Keeps you in the game without probably the stresses and pressures that come with playing, particularly as you get a little bit older and the body's a little bit more weary. It's quite nice to be able to sit on a sofa and basically tell everyone else what they should have been doing rather than get it from the gaffer on a Monday morning when you're feeling stiff.
Very good, you are. Adrian, what have you got for Joby?
Yeah, it's a great gig, isn't it? I mean, it's not like a proper job, is it, Job?
Until you're watching, Clarkie. I've had some rough games to try and make look good, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, this is true. I just wanted to ask you, over 750 sort of senior appearances, what's your best EFL memory?
Oh, wow. It's got to be winning the league, I think, definitely, especially after the season before we lost in the playoff final, which was certainly my lowest point. I had four playoff adventures and never quite made it. So, I think with that in mind, being able to lead a team for a brilliant season and cap it off by winning the league's definitely got to be the highlight.
Nice. Sam, you're up.
We're being very kind to you here, mate, because I'd definitely steam in with who's the worst manager that you've ever had in the EFL. I know that I manage you particularly well on a Saturday evening these days, giving you all the notes and that for the Saturday night viewers. Who is your favourite ever manager that you've had in the Football League?
Oh, this is always a tough one because I've got to be honest, I've been very fortunate to work with some wicked managers over my career and have to sort of give a few an honourable mention. Justin Edinburgh, of course, was brilliant. God rest his soul. Brendan Rodgers, in terms of tactically, for me, at that stage of my career, he was different to anyone I'd ever had. He was sort of the first of that new generation in terms of his coaching, you know, challenged us on a daily basis. The way the training flowed and in terms of actually setting up for games, everything throughout the week, there was a theme to it leading into a game. Whereas before that, you know, as much as I enjoyed working with the likes of Ian Dowie and loads of others, for me, that was the most detailed and enjoyable, I think, time that I had at Watford and then at Reading. And certainly for me, it was no surprise to see him go on to achieve what he has done in the game. Top, top manager and also a top, top guy. I really enjoyed working with him on a personal level as well.
And a massive influence in the EFL, right? I mean, you look at from the Championship to League Two, everybody's picking young coaches without a massive background as a player these days. And Brendan must have been a big part of that because he was one of the first.
Absolutely. I didn't know anything about him, to be honest, when he walked into Watford. He'd obviously been coaching at Chelsea. He was at Reading previously. But the confidence he had for someone who didn't have a very good playing career in terms of, you know, I know he got injured and got into coaching very soon, but as soon as he stepped on the training pitch, that's a hard thing to do, to come into a group of senior lads, you know, a club that, you know, replacing Adi Boothroyd as well. He was, you know, very well regarded at the football club. But the first session, he just had us all, you know, fantastic, you know, sessions and, yeah, just so enjoyable. And I think, as you say, he was the one who sort of, well, certainly EFL-wise, broke the mould. It was a really bold decision by Watford to get him in, actually, but a good one, obviously. And they were disappointed that he left so soon, but he was always destined to go on and do great things.
All right, Clarkie, you've got the question that I think we're going to get the best answer from.
Look, you're Mr. Nice Guy. We all know that, Joves. But who is the nastiest, the meanest, most horrible player that you play with or against? Come on, dish your dirt.
Okay, again, I've got a couple. I will keep it fairly brief, but with definitely has got to be Ben Thatcher.
I know Ben. Yeah.
So we were youth team players, sort of getting our way in and around first team, and you'd get called over sometimes. And as a winger, you did not want to be playing against him because you would get the actual, like, you go past me one more time and I'm going to break your legs. And I think he actually did mean it. We skipped past him once or twice, a few of the other young wingers at the time, but you'd always be looking over your shoulder. Very tough to play against. But again, it was good grounding for us, I've got to be honest. And you try to use that to your advantage. Playing against Kevin Muscat. This is for an old school kind of Millwall connection. Again, those are the days where fullbacks would have at least one, two, sometimes more levelers to see if you really fancied it as a young pro. And they'd always get away with at least one or two. And he'd 100% leave his mark on you and make sure, you know, that you were at it. And you had to be able to respond. If you weren't, then you'd just go out the game. So he was always tough, as were Millwall games in general. But dirty. He'd try and smash you, that's for sure.
Leave his mark on players, but also I remember going to see Forrest at Wolves when I was about 15, 16 with a friend of mine. Kevin Muscat was playing. He took a throw in near us and my mate stood up and went, "Oi, Muscat, you knob." And Kevin Muscat turned round, stared at him and said, "You dare say that again and see what happens." And my mate didn't say another word for the rest of the game. Younger listeners, if you're wondering who Ben Thatcher is, just Google Ben Thatcher, Pedro Mendes, and you'll get a good example of what Joby's talking about there. Sam, you got the penultimate question for Joby, please.
Joby, when you were out there applying your trade, whose supporters, which opposition fans made the best racket?
Oh, God, another tough one to answer. I have a little think about this, and I've got to say, Bramall Lane, Sheffield United, was always a real tough place to go because, again, for me, I love the older stadiums. I think there's a bit more character to them, you know, real tradition in grounds and, you know, the noise that they make there, you know, you really do feel it. And when they get on top of you, you feel like you're playing against more than just the team. It is the crowd as well. Also suffered my only red card of my career at Bramall Lane. And that was, again, because I got a little bit sucked into the atmosphere, the environment. I'd had one booking already. Then I went to go and close a fullback down and it was kind of one of those games where things were getting on top of you. And that's what that atmosphere can do. Again, the only time, but I remember it very, very clearly. I remember having to walk in and hopefully the boys, I left them out there hoping they could get a result. But I think we did in the end, but it was a real lonely sort of 10, 15 minutes of the game remaining. And I'll never remember that. But yeah, I'd say Bramall Lane, fantastic place to play.
Magnificent stuff. Right, before we let you go, you were at Norwich Millwall on Friday, covering the game. Norwich, they really needed this, didn't they? A couple of big results for them of late. It was looking a bit ropey for Dean Smith, actually, before this, but this was fairly convincing, Sergeant Major Factor.
Very good. Yes, Mr. Sergeant was fantastic. I've got to say, I was really, really impressed with him. Obviously, had a good night on the Tuesday before that when they beat Huddersfield, which was a massive win for them. And again, just as a player who's been through bad patches, that's what Norwich have looked like to me before. Just fallen out of that knack of winning games. They've been in positions where you think they're going to go on and take a lead and they don't. Maybe something goes against them and then they react really poorly. But that was not the case, certainly. The other night, they were absolutely fantastic against Millwall. Nunes, I think, is going to be a top signing. He's come in into that sort of attacking midfield area. Max Ahrens was up and down all night, like we know he's going to be. Sanani's come into the team. So I think in terms of an attacking threat, they looked really good. I think if you were to say that to Norwich, they're going to win two home games in a week and Pukki's not going to score any goals. You know, I don't think many people would have had that down. So now I think they've got something else to their armour they probably didn't think they would do. Big question now for Dean Smith. What does he do? Does he keep Sargent down the middle? Does he bring Pukki in at some stage? Great problems to have, but certainly a week that Norwich really, really needed. But they looked like the team we thought they were going to be. I think they've shaken off last season now, and I think they'll kick on.
Right. I thought that was magnificent. But Adrian, Sam, you get the casting votes. Has Joby McEnough, our first ever guest, passed the fit and proper guest test?
Luckily, anyone's failed it, have they? In EFL history.
No one's done it before. You didn't ask me my worst manager, though. I was looking forward to that one, actually.
Set a precedent here, shall we, chaps? No, yeah. He's a top man, isn't he? We can't do that.
No, he's passed. All good. Well played.
Well done, Joby. All these accolades that you've had in recent months and weeks.
That tops a lot, Matt. That tops a lot.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope to speak to you soon.
Pleasure. Good luck with it all, guys.
Joby McEnough there, all-round good guy and EFL expert. All right, let's have a look at some of the weekend's games then. Sunderland versus Norwich in the Championship. Alex Neil facing his old club. We've spoken about Norwich already. Adrian, I've been impressed with Sunderland so far. Who do you think finishes higher in the table come May, Sunderland or Norwich?
Oh, I think Norwich finish higher, but I have been very, very impressed with Sunderland. They've got a system in place. They've got a good spirit within the group and they just look really, really settled. And they are not going to make it easy for anyone in the Championship this season. I don't think Alex Neil's teams ever do, really, do they? They are very well organised. I saw them in the flesh at Sheffield United. They went down to 10 men and boy, did they show some fight and character to stay in the game. They were a little bit uncomfortable, I thought, defending set pieces. But that's the only real thought I could pick up on them. What I love is the front two, Ellis Sims and Ross Stewart. They've got a bit of an aura about them. I think Sims in particular has got a presence. Seeing him in the flesh, he's a bigger than I thought. And he makes some great runs. He always wants the ball. And they're looking to sort of work as a pair. So I think Sims and Stewart, sort of backed up by Pritchard behind them and the wing-backs flying forward, Gooch and Clark, I think they can cause Norwich problems in this game. And I think they can take something from it. Whether that's a win, I'm not sure. But I think they can at least get a draw against Norwich City here. They're playing well.
Middlesbrough v Swansea. Yeesh. I mean, talk about two out of form teams. Second bottom hosting 20th here. Here's my question for you on this, Sam. Does Chris Wilder see out the season as Middlesbrough manager? Because there's something about him and this
he's miserable
gig,
right now.
I mean, but he seems like he's been miserable since he got there. There was that weird thing of him linking himself with the Burnley job. Then he had a whinge about the lack of money. Now he's saying that he wants to get rid of this squad and bring a whole new raft of players in. Doesn't feel like a great fit, Sam.
No, and he's had a go at the players, hasn't he, after the game, the most recent game. Remind me where it was, the 2-2.
Lost at Reading.
Sorry, the 1-0 at Reading, yeah. Which I think at the start of the season could have been catastrophic looking at that result. But Reading obviously have produced a couple of good victories, much to everyone's surprise. So it's not the end of the world, but he does need a performance. And I think
haven't won a game yet. Lost at home to Barnsley in the League Cup.
Yeah, and I think considering that he's obviously bought Marcus Forsey, you know, I think it's a brilliant signing for the second tier. And now Muniz as well from Fulham. I mean, that should be good enough to get the goals, to finish the chances that he's been bemoaning his forward players for in the opening weeks of the season. There just seems to be a structural problem right now. They're playing the system that he likes. I think he's got the personnel, give or take. Midfield maybe needs a little bit more sturdiness, needs a little bit more muscle in there, I would say, because a few of the goals have come down the spine of the pitch. I'm thinking of Chris Willock's goal for QPR. So maybe there's a bit of an imbalance there, but I look at their 11 anyway in comparison to a lot of the teams in the Championship, and they should be competing. And I think the expected goals and the shot count and stuff like that does back up that they should probably have more points than they do right now. But it's a big game, and it's a bigger game because of Swansea's plight right now. They have not started the season well at all. I still feel they're short in the wide positions. I thought that was something that he'd definitely fix in the summer. He's got Sorinola playing on one side at the moment, a lad he had at MK Dons. He's got Ryan Manning playing on the actual right-hand side for him right now. And that up against Jones of Middlesbrough is an interesting area for the weekend straight away. But they're just not doing what everyone anticipated them to do, Swansea. They would have been in the majority of people's playoffs, I would say. And they look miles short of that right now. And he's not going to change Russell Martin. So unless he can get an upturn in the current squad's form or bring a couple in before the window, this could be a disappointing campaign for him.
Long way to go, but not a good start. In League One, Adrian, the standout fixture is Derby. Who are in League One, if you hadn't heard, Derby County. They got relegated last season, so they're in League One. They take on Peterborough. Just looking at the start of the season, how do you think Rossini's done in bedding these new boys in and in a posh doing that thing that they always do, where they look too good for League One and not quite good enough for the Championship?
Quite possibly on posh. I think Liam Rossini is doing a fine job, to be perfectly honest. The performances have been better than the results. They look a pretty well-coached team to me. They're not giving very much away at the back at all. Very well structured. They're just struggling for that finish, aren't they, really, Derby County? I think getting someone like Dave McGoldrick fit and flying will definitely help. He's made a couple of appearances off the bench. I mean, you look at the numbers. Peterborough have only had four more shots than Derby in open play, but they've scored 10 goals in open play and Derby have scored 2. So I think it tells you a story really about the clinical edge that Posh have with Marriott and Clark Harris and others in their side compared to a Derby team that's sort of finding its way at the moment. I think most of what they're doing, Derby, is pretty good. It's just falling down on that final touch. But I'm pretty sure it will come. And given that Peterborough have conceded twice at Cheltenham, twice at Plymouth, this might be the day where Derby sort of kickstart their campaign.
In League Two, meanwhile, it's Salford against Stevenage. Stevenage, one of the surprise packages this season. I know we've just spoken to you, Adrian, and kind of format dictates that you go one guest to the other, but I can't resist the opportunity to get you to lavish praise on Steve Evans, your old pal. He's doing a terrific job.
I've always loved him.
Can't wait to praise him to the hill.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Love him. He's doing a great job. I mean, Stevenage are flying. Absolutely flying. More shots than anyone else. Fewest shots faced. They're pressing the living daylights out of opponents. They're breaking at speed. They're dominating the chance count in most of the matches that we've seen so far. I think they've got a real spread of goal scorers as well. 9 different players have hit the back of the net already. So yeah, really, really like what I see from Stevenage in the opening weeks of the season. He's lowered the age. I sort of had a pop at that last season. Too many veterans. And one or two are still in there, but you've got some guys in their 20s that have sort of refreshed it as well. And yeah, they look like they can be a real threat. And this will be interesting because they're up against a Salford team that are stylistically dissimilar to them. They're the new Swindon. But I'll leave Sam to talk about Salford if he wants.
Yeah, Brandon Thomas-Asante at the four for Salford at the start of the season. Sam, if he keeps firing in the goals, would you expect Neil Wood to be in the hot seat until at least October?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he looks physically stronger, Thomas-Asante. I always thought of him as being quite a lightweight forward player, but he looks to be like he's put on some bulk. And he looks to be vitally important to their chances of going all the way this year. And I've been incredibly encouraged by Salford's performances, despite the drop points at Doncaster. They were missing McElhenney and Richard Narty, who we know from Chelsea, Matt. And I think those two are going to be extremely vital to their chances. And I think, the whole plan in appointing Neil Wood and playing this style of football has had immediate effects. I think they're looking like a really good side. And as Clarkey says, this will be a big contrast. The team talk from Steve Evans will be pretty obvious, even at this stage of the week. What the intent will be from Stevenage will be to bully, to harass, put them under pressure from set pieces, I'm sure. And Salford will have to stand up to that, but also be composed enough to play their good football that they've shown in the opening weeks of the season. So, like Clarkey, incredibly encouraged by both of these teams. I think Stevenage, when you look at the squad, players like Sweeney, I've always championed, probably at a higher level than this. That's a great pickup. Piergiani's an out-and-out defender who I'm sure Steve Evans will trust and love working for and working with. And in the forward positions, they've got Rose, who they'll know from Mansfield. I thought he was on an upward trajectory to maybe getting kind of championship. Not happy for him, but I think if he gets focused again, he can supply the goals to complement Norris and Roberts and the like. So two teams, even at this early stage, I reckon got great opportunities to get certainly in that top seven.
Good stuff. Some really intriguing fixtures in the EFL this weekend. We'll look back on the best of them in next week's show. Right, before we go, a couple of bits that caught our eye this week. First of all, we've got to say how brilliant to see Charlie Wyke returning to action for Wigan after missing 9 months following a cardiac arrest. Always worth pointing out that his manager, Liam Richardson, saved his life. At the other end of the scale, Ian Matson's red card. Absolutely magnificent, this. Adrian, when was the last time you totally lost control of your senses? Did you ever do anything this crude on a football pitch? And how much did you laugh? Because you see the footage and you go, oh, there's a tackle. And then about 5 seconds later, across comes this young Dutchman barreling into his opponent and sending him flying. It's just glorious stuff.
I can't watch it enough. It's fantastic, isn't it? Just the most obvious red card ever. I've told the story of when I got sent off once for a sort of shove. I've said that before. I'm not going to go down that route. But there was a time a few years back. I'd played golf recently with Sam, actually, so he knows how bad I am at golf. But I was having a really bad game. It was I took my dad, Father's Day treat, to the Belfry. We had a night at the Belfry, two rounds. First round was great on the posh course. Then we were on one of the other ones. And I was just having a stinker. I kept slicing everything. And then, yeah, about five holes from the end, sliced one into the bushes, lost about my 25th ball. And I just lost it. Chucked my club into the bushes and said, "Dad, I'm not playing anymore. I'm going in." And I constantly get reminded about my bad sportsmanship ever since. So, yeah, I completely lost it. But it is what it is.
All right, Sam, my question for you. You were on, it's not called EFL, is it anymore? It's called Football League Highlights, which is pretty route one. But there you go. You were on the new ITV show this weekend. Any big differences from that to Quest? I mean, have you got a team of flunkies now attending to your
everyday? Not in the club, but...
No, and that was going to be my other question. Did you and Joby go into the same wardrobe with your eyes closed and pull out two very similar polo shirts? Talk to us about the differences between Quest and ITV, because it's an upgrade in terms of broadcaster.
Well, there is zero difference in terms of the day, because it's the same production, essentially, in the same building. The one difference for me was I was feeling a little bit peaky, so thankfully I didn't do what is known in the trade as an Ian Holloway and leave mid-show. Because of a dicky tummy, which did happen, I think, in one of the first series. So, yeah, not too much difference. But me and Joby did actually have a conversation about what we were wearing before we went down to get changed. And I showed him what I had on my person, in my bag. And we had that conversation. And I think I did raise that your grey and my lilac are a little bit similar. But then... We came out wearing the same thing, basically. So we had actually conferred, which is a bit of a novelty for us guests, because I don't think that's the done thing, really, is it? You know, it's kind of just I'm wearing what I'm wearing and you get in the studio. But me and Joby had actually done that thing where we said, "Oh, what are you going to wear? I'd like to be matching." So there you go.
What did you make of it, Clark? A bit harsh on the eye, or was it quite sweet to see them dressed up as football friends?
It was quite nice, really, wasn't it? Yeah, two peas in a pod, Joby and Sam. So
Joby
does
favour the zip, the little zip at the top, and mine was just a relaxed collar.
The only issue is I know Sam's quite competitive and he likes to look better than his opposite number, but it's hard to look better than Joby, isn't it?
Oh, it's just hard to. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's that. Yeah, that's,
I did
that's
think
on,
it
really.
Was a particularly handsome trio actually on Saturday night. That was the first thing I thought when I got booked.
Certainly duo. Yeah. Right. I'm loathe to steal features that we used to do on the Totally Football League show, but given Sam's talent for it, he's got to analyse a footballer's tweet for us this week. It comes from Dominic Iorfa, posting after his chef wed won at Bolton. There are three pictures of Dominic during the game, one of which he looks is about to be sick in, but the other two seems okay. He says, "Great win today and a clean sheet. Away support, applause emoji, and then an owl emoji," appropriately enough. It's pretty route one, Sam, but it gets the job done.
Yeah, for the new season, immediately it gets a 0 out of 10 if they are holding or commenting on a man of the match award. I mean, that just appalls me. It absolutely appalls me, that. So that's a 0 out of 10. So Dominic hasn't gone down that route. I will give him a slight pass because his namesake, it's one for the kids here, played for QPR badly in the early 90s. There was a Dominic Iorfa at QPR. Wasn't my favourite striker in QPR colours. And I like the owl emoji.
Yeah,
I do like the owl. The content's not great. I do like the owl. So 5 out of 10.
I didn't even know there was an owl emoji. So is it actually quite educational for
you? Has he stumbled across that, is what you're thinking, which often happens to me.
I like the way that he's just put away support applause emoji rather than fans were class as always, which is the go-to in that situation. So if you mix it up, you get a good mark. There you go, Dominic. We'll give you, I don't know, 6 out of 10 for that. Hopefully you'll rate this podcast higher than that. That will just about do it for this, the premier episode of What the EFL. Adrian, have we got away with it? Are you going to be back next week?
I'll be back. Yeah, hopefully. Look, it's been brilliant. Brilliant to get the band back together. And I just hope that we can get as many listeners across from the Totally Football League show to rejoin us. Because I'll tell you, one of the reasons we're doing this podcast, one of the reasons, apart from the fact that we just missed each other and missed talking about the EFL, is the love that we got online from people who were absolutely gutted that that the podcast was not going to be on air any longer. So in part, it's down to people saying how much they'd miss it that we're here today. So yeah, tell your friends, retweet it, and yeah, we'll try and keep it going as long as we can.
Sam, we're all in for as long as we can get away with it with our spouses for working for free and taking up time when we could be looking after young children.
Yeah, my Mondays have felt rather empty the last couple of weeks. I did feel a little bit bereft after the first weekend, and we weren't getting as in depth, well, stuck into the EFL as the three of us normally are. So, yeah, please listen, tell everyone about it. Tell them we're back, and hopefully we'll continue to get the love off the EFL hordes. Quick Dominic Iofa update. He is, in fact, the son of the aforementioned Dominic Iofa, who played 8 times for QPR in the 1990-91 season. And literally, he must have had the most clubs out of any professional footballer I've ever known. But yeah, Dominic Iofa of Sheffield Wednesday fame is Dominic Iofa of QPR fame, yeah. Son.
Yeah, family love a blue and white stripe. Yeah.
Trevor Benjamin might have something to say about that. Most clubs, they'd probably also like me to point out that it's Iofa, not Iofa. But whilst I give with one hand, I'll take away with the other. If you're naming your son after yourself, that's a hard no for me. I mean, there are lots of names. You don't have to pick the one that you've already got. Sorry, Dominic and Dominic Senior. Right, as the boys say, we need your support if we're going to keep this thing going. Tell everybody you know, promote it for us if you can. And remember, we're looking for sponsors. If you want to get your brand on our pod, get in touch, email whattheefl@yahoo.com or slide into our DMs on Twitter. We're at EFL. What the? If you're not a sponsor, don't feel you can't say hello. We'd love to hear from listeners too. Whatever's on your mind, EFL wise, let us know via the social. We'll be back next week for the difficult second show. Many thanks to our producer, Marley, who's putting this together and working overtime doing so. We really appreciate it. Thanks to Joby for joining us earlier too, and to Adrian and Sam, but mainly to you for checking us out. We hope you'll do so again next week. But for this week, that's it for the first episode of What the EFL.